Transportation Committee meeting to order.
A meeting of Transportation Committee, set of Transportation Committee meeting to order at February the 24th, and we want to thank Senator Strzelczewski for vacating the committee room on a timely manner so that we could do our Transportation Committee. We have present Senator Abood, Senator Paul Fisher, Senator Jan Fakes, the chairman, Senator Coghill. The first order of business that we have on the agenda is the committee substitute for House Bill 240. We have our guest, Dave Thompson, is here, so we were the author of the bill, and we left it at our last meeting that we were going to take a look at a proposed amendment by Senator Josephson to tighten up the penalties. And we have then before us the bill as it was submitted to the committee, and then we have a proposed committee substitute, but I think we should speak probably from the bill itself and then see what transpires here, and then we could put the committee substitute together. So Representative Thompson, do you wish to address the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would simply say that I have no problem with Senator Josephson's amendment, if that's the wish of the committee to make it Class B. It's a very simple and clean amendment. I would ask, however, the committee just either go with the bill the way it is or go with Senator Josephson's amendment. But I would request that you consider moving the bill out today.
Do we have any questions of Representative Thompson? Now, we have one person, Lisa Nelson, in the audience, and she's from law, and she's the one that put together the proposal that we have. And Lisa, welcome to the committee, and we would like to have your comments on it, and then maybe before we move one way or the other, maybe the committee might want to just stay with the original bill. That's why I wanted to just keep it on the table. So Lisa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lisa Nelson. For the record, I'm the Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Law, the Criminal Division. From the last meeting, I understand that the idea was to change this to a Class B misdemeanor, and just would like to state the position of the Department of Law on that recommendation. We would prefer that it stay an infraction, and just being that we feel it falls in line with other types of offenses similar, speeding, going through a stop sign, etc. And if there were circumstances that were so egregious, a child was right out in front, screeching of tires, reckless driving, spinning wheels, or any type of thing like that, the officer always has the option to charge reckless driving, which is a jailable offense, which would essentially meet the objectives you have for the school bus bill. That reckless driving is punishable by a $1,000 fine and a year in jail, which is actually even more than a Class B misdemeanor, which is a $1,000 fine and 90 days in jail. If you changed this to a Class B misdemeanor, you would be essentially enabling the defendant to obtain a jury trial, also obtain a public defender, just essentially clog up the court system with another offense of this type, also involve the district attorney. And whereas a lot of the instances of passing a school bus could be a little bit less dangerous than what would justify ordinarily a reckless driving type situation, which should involve a jury trial, etc., a public defender, a district attorney, whereas now those type of offenses are only involve a court trial with a traffic court judge. I want to state that the Department of Law certainly commends the purpose behind the bill. I mean, it is very true that it's difficult to prove these cases. In many cases, the school bus driver cannot see the driver that goes by, and therefore there should be some mechanism to find someone responsible. We appreciate the, especially the Section E that has been developed since last session, and that essentially provides for a $100 civil penalty to a person who's a registered owner or a lessor who was not necessarily identified as a driver, but essentially you're holding somebody responsible for letting someone drive their car and driving it by a school bus. They would not be assessed the points, however, that would essentially take away their license or something when the state has not even proved that that person drove by the school bus. And I mean, it's the whole system of the presumption of innocence, and that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that someone is guilty. So Section E kind of takes care of that problem. We really appreciate that being in there. As far as the changes that...
Lisa, Senator Booth.
Are we becoming our brother's keeper again?
For the defendant, you mean?
Well, yeah, if a guy goes out and he goes through the stop sign, or he goes to not the stop sign, but he goes by some school bus, we're going to get the guy that owns the car and fine him $100. He doesn't get points, but fine him $100.
That's correct. That's in Section E. But however, if the driver can be identified, then he is subject to the penalty found in, I believe, D, which is the 6 demerit points, and either an infraction with a fine, or if you choose to go to a Class B misdemeanor, you can be found guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. As far as the specific language changes that I've made in Department of Law proposed community substitute, D there would just say that a driver who violates a section is guilty of an infraction, which is what is existing law right now, as opposed to Class B misdemeanor, which is in the committee substitute. Subsection E, there, all I did was essentially rearrange language and say that it is an affirmative defense to a civil penalty under the subsection that, one, the owner or lessor's vehicle was stolen, two, the driver was convicted under D of the section, or three, the lessor had disclosed to law enforcement authorities the name and address of the person. There, I make it an affirmative defense so that the defendant has to prove that his car was stolen. The state does not have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that his car was stolen. That's what would happen in a defense situation.
Do you understand that?
Or you want to run that?
Sure. Okay. There's two types of defenses. There's a defense, and that's where, for example, self-defense. Let's say someone kills somebody, and the defendant claims self-defense. The state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was not self-defense. Okay. Another situation. The other type of defense is an affirmative defense, and that's where, for example, I have a jury trial tomorrow, in fact, that's going to be a situation where the defense attorney is claiming that the woman had no choice but to go in her car and drive because she was afraid of being assaulted by someone. There, it's called a necessity defense, and the defendant has to prove that she had no choice but to get in the car and drive. She has to prove that there was no other alternative. She has to prove that the danger was greater, that the danger of driving was less than the danger that she was afraid of. It's who has the burden of proof. So that's what this would establish. Affirmative defense would be the burden on the defendant as opposed to the state. Also, I just said here that in the committee substitute, it says in E that the subsection does not apply to a lessor of a vehicle if the lessor keeps a record of the name and address of the lessee. All I said is that that does not apply if he discloses to law enforcement authorities the name and address of the person. So he's got to disclose it to law enforcement authorities, not just keep the record, but give it to the law enforcement authorities. And finally, the subsection F would essentially state, as I told you earlier, that just because someone is charged with a violation of this section does not mean that they can't be charged with reckless driving, which again is a jailable offense. Certainly they can be charged with manslaughter if they killed the child. And that's just logical sense. I mean, they always have that ability to charge any higher offense that they want. And those are pretty much all my comments.
Do we have any questions from the committee? Lisa?
Yes. Chairman, I guess your comments have not been incorporated into an actual bill at this point.
No.
This would be right here. The comments are in the CS. They are worded in the CS.
There is this worksheet.
Okay, I love that.
Here. The question I guess that I have in here is when you turn the tables and you say that the defendant has to prove it's innocent.
In the particular items here, that the vehicle was stolen. Well, in certain instances, the information is usually in the defendant's, where the defendant has the information more so than the state. He knows that his vehicle was stolen. He can tell you that he reported it stolen, whereas instead of us having to prove that it was stolen, that puts too much of a burden on the state. And there the information is within his power to come up with.
Mr. Chairman, just to provide another example. If, for example, I've got some kind of a heart attack and I'm going to crash that light anyhow. In other words, I'm going to the hospital. I would have to prove that was the circumstance that I was, why I was going through the red light or through the flashing light in the other lane or something, which may be able to get me off the hook.
If that would fall under the necessity defense, that's possible that we'd have to prove, but that's within your ability to prove that. You said, I had a heart attack, I had pain. I can't prove that.
That's why I'm trying to get an example where it would be hard for the state.
Exactly.
The gentleman kind of hard pressed for Ben Osmond with a heart attack to defend himself on this case.
He's a defense attorney, but
same tobacco's the stuff.
Well, we've had thank you very much. No questions. We've had a full view of and I guess the before the committee is whether you want to take up the pass out the bill as received by the committee, or if you want to pass out the bill with the stiffer penalty in it as suggested by Senator Josephson.
Well, which one is the Josephson amendment?
This one, the committee substitute for committee substitute for House bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senate committee substitute.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House bill number 240, transportation. Ask unanimous consent.
Any objection? No objection, so ordered.
Chairman, I move that we move Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House bill number 240. Next committee referral, ask unanimous consent.
Is there an objection? No objection, and so ordered. And so Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House bill 240 has passed the Senate Transportation Committee with individual recommendations. And we'll send over to the House with that a letter indicating the Department of Law's presentation. All right, we now have in front of us, don't the committee all run away. This is going to be a very interesting afternoon, I hope. All right, now the other part of our meeting today is capital projects cleanup. And Commissioner Knapp, and I see that you have some of your people with you, and I guess we could probably start with a presentation. And I've got several questions that I'd like to ask, but I think I'd like to kind of go through your presentation of how you left off from where you were with this presentation last year.
All right, Mr. Chairman, let me, if it's all right with your permission, I'll introduce the people I have.
Have them come up to the table if you will.
Okay, I have my deputy, of course, Lawrence Parks, and I have a man who is responsible for the majority, in fact, if not all, the work on capital project cleanup, Jim Merrill. And I have my newly christened controller, Dan Malik, who will be sitting in here to help make sure this doesn't happen again.
Did you sprinkle holy water on him or something?
Well, you know, sometimes that is not holy water, sometimes, Mr. Chairman. Why don't you come on up here?
Just bring a couple chairs alongside there and come on up, Jim and Warren, any of you that you wish. We'll have a cozy little overview. He's going to back you up way back.
Way back. Anyway, we left off last year. We told you that what we were trying to do was to isolate all the projects that we could in terms of the status of the projects, the fund balances in the project, split up by phase and with a separation of both federal authorization and general funds. As you know, the old accounting system, and in fact the current accounting system, does not separate the funds, and it merges both the federal and the federal authorization and the general funds, which does not allow good tracking of the amount of general funding that you've used on a given project. And it gets particularly sensitive when, in fact, you go along and spend general funds in anticipation of federal reimbursement, and the federal reimbursement does not come because they chose not to participate for one of several reasons. Well, as of June 30th, we were able to get a snapshot through extensive work on the computers of every project that we have in our inventory. We have it by phase, we have it by fund balances, we have it by funding types. And that was delivered to me around mid to late December, but it was a snapshot of the situation as of 30 June. And the situation, at least in my book, is not encouraging. Senator Fakes heard the roughly first part of this here last week at my Senate Finance budget hearing. But basically it boils down this way, Mr. Chairman. As of 30 June, it looks to me like we either are in or about to be in the hole to the tune of about $40 million. Now, before you blanch, and this was something that was suspected by the governor when he first came in, and it was he who put together this team to start sorting out these capital projects and find out exactly where we were. And they suspected probably even more than that. Well, let me explain how the $40 million comes about. Basically, on projects that have been completed, we find that we are probably in the hole between $9 and $10 million, call it $10 million. On other projects that are still in process, and in doing a detailed analysis of the phases of the project, we find out that we're either over expended on the project or over-committed on the project, over-obligated on the project, to the tune of about $29 million plus, which brings us up to the $40 million level. Now, theoretically, on the projects that are still in process, we should probably stop those projects. We have to do an analysis, but if you went right according to the letter, you'd probably end up wanting to stop those projects, or at least certain phases thereof, the ones that are overcommitted, so that you would not be certifying funds were available when they are really not. But depending on the phase, there are some projects and in some phases that if we did it, our exposure in terms of contract liability claims and things of this type would be far in excess, I think, of the $40 million that we're apparently in the hole. Now, right now, we're discussing in-house
just exactly what we do about this. How are we going to solve this one? And we basically boiled it down to two approaches.
Commissioner, one point there before we get away from your solving them. How did we get into the position in the first place? Was it a lack of systems to be able to track it, or yes. You know, sometimes we in industry and government get ourselves buried in the forest and we can't see the tree, and sometimes a common denominator approach might. But is that how we got involved in it?
In answer to your question, yes. Basically, we became captives of a system that did not provide for separating the funds or accounting for the funds. It accounted for the funds on an expenditure basis, the same as when they were accounted for on a budgetary basis, where if, in fact, you had a $100 million project comprised of $90 million worth of federal authorization and $10 million worth of general funds, it threw them in as $100 million worth of funds, and it was accounted for on the expenditure side the same way. Moreover, the issue was, and in fact, is still to a certain extent complicated by the fact that what happens is you'll send your expenditure documents in, or your obligation documents, and the quirk of the system is that it always plugs it, so you end up with a positive balance, and you don't know you're in trouble unless you really are looking at it quite carefully. Now, I can handle part of this in the department by insisting that my project managers will keep absolutely meticulous records of their own that are then updated and checked with the accounting data that comes back through the main system. And as I was saying, in terms of, we've spotted basically two alternative courses of action. And either one of those courses of action is going to require a pretty close coordination, first starting at the cabinet level, because there are other departments involved in this besides DOT. It's going to involve some interaction with the third floor in the form of the governor and OMB. And finally, it's going to involve a great deal of interaction between us after the first couple of meetings with the legislature, both in terms of whatever reappropriations might be needed and in terms of what we are going to do in order to set up a reasonable program of work for the future.
Commissioner, would it be all right with you if I know that you haven't got any notes and you're pretty capable of going on with this, but would it be easier for you to stay in your train of thought and have us ask questions, or would it be better for us, because this is a complicated scenario that we're in, and I want the committee to understand it thoroughly, and would it be easier for us to chime in and ask questions, or would it be better, would you like to just do your statement and then we'll go?
Whatever fits best for you. It might be well if you chimed in with a question whenever it hits you, and if that's easier for you, it doesn't make a big difference to me. Whatever way you like to operate, Mr. Chairman.
Because
I think I know where I'm going on this thing.
Well, we don't want to get you sidetracked. That's my point.
No, hopefully you won't, sir.
Okay. Then Senator Fisher.
And this has nothing to do. He can still keep on going the train of thought. You can provide a list of the projects that caused the $40 million shortfall.
Yes, I can, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I can.
Could we have that?
We can break that out.
Because I was just curious. How much of that $40 million happens to be in communities with a population of, let's say, 100,000 and above?
Well, here's part of it. That's why I bring Jim along. He carries all this heavy stuff on. But anyway.
Okay, no, I said if you can get it.
I don't want the...
No. It's by Senate district.
Pardon?
My election district.
None of it's in my election.
Oh, you said... Excuse me, bye. I thought you said it's your Senate district, and I was going to walk out.
No hope. No. We can sort this.
Identify,
Mr. Chairman. We can sort
that's
this.
That's all I have, if I can get that.
And as a matter of fact, you knowing and getting this information is part of the solution in any case, and it's at least part of one of the alternatives that I'm ready to kind of throw on the table. You might say, well, how do we get into this?
Well, to ask you just a question right here. Last year, we were real jubilant, and the fact is that you came to the table and said, hey, guys, I just found $35 million, mm-hmm. and you stuck it into the Band-Aid of last year's budget, and now you're coming back and saying, whoops. Because really there wasn't that much funny money out there to begin with.
Mr. Chairman, we really bugged him for that money, the governor's office and us. He didn't voluntarily offer it up. I mean, in defense of the commissioner. He was drugs kicking and screaming to the altar.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the senator's defense. At the third phase, you're probably right, because we were still scratching. But you know what the deficits looked like last year, and you know we weren't. So I, on the first cast anyway, I threw it up on the table, and I was great to throw it up on the table. Near the end, the senator is correct. But I did that, and I did that with full knowledge, and maybe I didn't say it loudly enough, but I did it with full knowledge that we could end up probably here this year, okay? I did that. But the fact of the matter is that I felt that at that point in time, there was a certain capital spending plan that I had to kept going, so I made a judgment call. And so the answer to that is yes, I did.
I'm not pointing fingers or blame. I've always been one of the advocates that all of this CIC funny money is not really all funny money, that we better be real careful about it as we go down the line, because we don't know how much money is really there on the table. But go ahead.
Well, you know, what it boils down to, in retrospect, and I don't know how this is going to wash out yet, because as I outlined the alternatives for a solution, you'll see where I'm coming from. But if I'm not mistaken, we probably turned up around $35 million in general funds last year, Senator. And this year, we're looking at probably $40 million worth of over expenditures, okay? Now, how did we get there? Was it the system? Yeah, partially it was the system, the accounting system. Partially it's the people system and the kind of controls you put on it, and I can handle that in my own department. And third, and probably not least, is the way we do our capital budgeting. And the way we do our capital budgeting, as you know, we put a capital budget in, on the federal side now. We put a capital budget in on the federal side with the projects, and then we put a certain amount of over-programming so that if we get extra money, we have something that's authorized and ready to go. Or if something is not ready to go that we had planned, we have alternate projects that we can put it in, except that we let them stay there from year after year. Each year, instead of rolling forward the projects that weren't started, what we end up doing is putting a new capital project in, a capital budget together. Mm-hmm. And so the things that don't get done pile up back there as projects that are sitting there waiting. And it was some of those that we let go last year. And it's a lot of those that are complicating the effort and included somewhere in here.
Okay, now Dick, last year you said, or Commissioner, excuse me, last year you said that you were going to have a new program and that you were looking at July 185 and back on these CICs, or CI, whatever they call it, CPCs, and that what you were doing from this budget period forward, you had it going to have a handle on. Have you got that system in place?
No, I don't, Mr. Chairman. And the reason I don't, it took us longer to get out of this, and I know precisely what I want to do. And how we get there, like I said, there are two alternative courses of action, but let me take the solution.
Okay.
The solution that I see to this is to go through all the projects that have not been started.
Okay.
Go through all the projects that have not been started. And go out to both my regions and go out to the election districts and say, here is the current six-year program that I have. They don't include these projects, okay? I'd like to get your assessment on where it ought to go in the six-year program. Then the projects that are not started yet, and I get this during this next fiscal year, prior to the preparation of the next capital budget, I get the input both from the regions and from the people through the representatives.
Through the legislature.
Yes, sir. And I put together a new six-year program.
including everything that's on the table and everything that's in there?
Including everything that was in here that was never started. And then I put together a new capital budget from that for next year, a new program of work for next year. And I also include over-programming. Yeah, I also include over-programming. The difference would be, and this is where the senator can bring me up short on it, because we had a little mix-up here on the Rabbit Creek, the Armin, but the concept...
Mix-up, out of the budget again.
Well, I didn't realize that, Senator, but I'll be, anyway...
It'll be in tomorrow morning.
I'll be looking...
It'd be nice if you told us how much.
The concept, Mr. Chairman, the concept goes like this. You take your federal program, of work, and you prioritize it. You prioritize it down to your funding level. For instance, if you say that you say that our federal apportionment, say this year, as of 1 March, due to Graham Rudman, will be, not apportionment, but our obligation authority, will be $135.7 million, or something like that.
Okay.
And we know that that we need to have a 10% match on that, roughly. Okay, so we know how much money is in the pot. And we might get additional obligation authority that another state could use, or something like that. And so we say, here are the projects in priority order down to this funding line that are funded by the money in the pot. Now, below that line are over-programmings. And if something drops out of the top, then you go down to the next one under the line. If we get additional obligation authority, you go down below the line and you start a project. At the end of the year, those programs that have not been started are rolled forward back into the six-year program and considered the next year in the new capital budget. And what that does for you, it makes DOT accountable to the legislature for doing the projects that they were supposed to have done. And if there's some project above the line that wasn't done, and there's one down below the line that was, then an explanation is due to the legislature, right, to the governor, and everybody else, that we didn't do this because we either couldn't get right away or the environmental impact statement was holding us up, so we went down this other one. So you'd have that kind of approach, and every year you would wipe your backlog clean.
Right. Commissioner, an accountability that what you're talking about, how much of a heartburn do you have, or can you state how much of a heartburn you have with Office of Budget and Management? Do they get into the middle of your controls, in the middle of your act, in trying to put together this project accountability?
No, they haven't, Mr. Chairman. They haven't to date, anyway.
Okay. Do they have authority to do that? I mean,
well, I'm sure of this. I'm sure that when I put in a project, a capital budget, I can put my priorities in based on local planning factors, based on municipal planning organizations. And if I were smart, I would have said that. But anyway, based on municipal planning organizations, and put together a priority list. Obviously, that's going to be the governor's budget, and they can do anything they want with it. I can fight for it, but ultimately that's the way it's going to come out. The next shot comes at it at the legislature.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant, is that you put your, let me rephrase it, when you put your program together, it goes to your boss, your boss's fiscal advisors is OMB. Do they get into the middle of moving, cutting, moving, putting around? Does that fooling around with it tilt your federal apportionments?
Well, no, it won't tilt the federal apportionments. The only effect it would have would be to affect the priority
in the six-year plan.
The priority of projects in the work program.
Okay. Yes.
Can we go to the priority of programs?
Yes.
Who sets that priority? The legislature or you?
Well,
both.
Initially, Mr. Chairman, I would
do.
Okay? Because I've got to submit the budget, but once again, there are local planning factors that come into effect. Hopefully, okay, and then I try to assimilate the regional into one overall capital transportation program of work, And so the short answer is yes, I do.
What I'm getting at is, okay, you do, then we look at it.
That's right.
Okay, then let's say the legislature, any one of us, this is our number one priority. You may not want it as your priority, but somehow the legislature says, we want this funded this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we go home. And in your mind, you feel that, gee, well, we really can't do that. Mm-hmm. Do you have the prerogative of moving it now where it doesn't get done?
I'm suggesting that I don't, that I wouldn't have that prerogative anymore. That's why I'm trying to set up a structure. Now, I might try to convince you that you shouldn't move it.
Right.
And I would do my best. You said, hey, Mister, this project has got to be up here instead of down there.
Yeah.
I'd probably argue. And I'd say, well, I don't think so, and here's the reasons why. Okay? But ultimately, after I have made my point, the disposal of the budget goes to the legislature. Okay? Now, what the governor does in terms of veto, that's something else again. However, it would be my intention, and it would be structured in such a way that once that project is appropriated above the line in the prior, it's funded for that year. Everything below that line, you can see where the funding level is over-programming. And if I don't start that project that year, okay, then I have to have some explanation as to why I did not do it. I could not just arbitrarily say, oh, well, that's what they said to do, so, but I don't like that. So I'll do that one down below the line instead. And what it does is introduces discipline into the budgeting system. You know what you're appropriating your money for, and it applies a little accountability to the executive branch for doing the job that it's charged with.
Does that answer your question?
Okay, just a follow up then. Let's take a specific. I can guess a little better that way. If there's a brand new project. Somehow the total cost the whole way through, but it's a two-year project, so it would be $5 million. The first phase is $1 million for the planning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole $5 million is appropriate. How does that work in your system? And it's above the line, but it's going to take 2 years, 3 years to complete, to be able to expend the whole $5 million.
Well, but the money would stay with that project.
Okay.
The general funds would stay with that project. As soon as we got the authorization from the Federal Highway, which has to be there in the first year, that's 1 year money, then I'd have to have that money attached to it, and it would stay with the project.
The problem is that when you do a call like that, when you do a project call, it's usually an 18-month or so call before project starts. So how many project calls have you got out where you've got preliminary engineering and you've got yourself almost committed, but not quite committed. How many dollars are we talking about there?
Well, you see, that brings up another facet. And when I described it persistently, I described it kind of in general terms.
Sure.
There's one other thing that I'm looking at, and that is a way that we can multiply and get a little bit of leverage on our money. And that is by breaking the project up. And rather than applying the whole federal authorization to a project that I know is going to expend over 2, 3, or 4 years, I break it up into phases, and what that does, it multiplies the use of my federal authorization, and at the same time reduces the amount of general fund money I've got tied up in a 5-year project.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another aspect that we'll be looking at.
Well, I'm concerned about all of the projects that are out there that have been engineered and that have been told to the constituency out there. And I realize that there are people that are taking projects off the table, putting them back on the shelf, taking them off, putting them back on the shelf, and it seems to be a yo-yo, but there's a lot of those that have been engineered now, and, you know, that have been engineered that are ready to go, and, you know, I don't like to make a decision call on any particular road or any particular area, but how many of those are there in there as far as state dollars are concerned? How much of that is going to eat up that projects on the above the line? Do you follow me what I'm trying to get to now?
No, precisely, Mr. Chairman, and that's why I've got to get input on those projects, both from my regions and from the legislature. We give you the status of it and decide how we want to proceed. Because
why don't we turn that around, the legislators and then the regions?
Well,
so that, you know, so that...
Either way, but I'm going to have to get some dope from my regional people, and I don't think it's got to be an us and them situation. I think it could be a cooperative type one. But let me try something on for size. Certainly projects that we have money sunk into that ought to go, well, then they ought to be considered that way. But if we get reluctant to do what I am proposing, which is take a good look at this backlog of projects, then what you got probably is about $500 million worth of authorizations sitting there, that you're going to put through a $135 million window each year. So what you're talking about is no new program of work for 3 to 4 years. Now, it's just that simple. And that's why I think that we've got to take a look at all these things and reassess what we want to do. Because since a lot of these were authorized or appropriated, needs have changed, times have changed, priorities have changed. And I think we've got to look at it.
All right. Now, just follow that through with one other question, Mr. We got $136 million in federal aid to airport, our federal highway money's coming at us this year.
Correct.
We had $142 million last year. We matched that up. That's sitting out there, and that's what we call our funny money. That's in these projects, and that's sitting out here. All right, we've obligated them. We've gone through all of the hoops with the feds. Do we have a system together where is this chart that you have in the back of your yellow sheet that Jim put together last year? Are you following your track here so that 2 years from now or a year from now you can come back to the table and say, we've finally seen the light in the end of the tunnel. We're not going to be any further, and eventually we're going to get out of this tunnel in this funny money process, and we'll have a project where that we can give you a report each year saying, here's our capital improvement project. These are the projects that are 2 years old. These are the projects that are 1 year old. These are the projects that are on the street. These are the projects that are in bid.
But let me try. I think we see that light at the end of the tunnel right now. The only thing that
got further away.
Well, not further away. What we see now is the real scope of the problem. And here's where we got to start making some hard calls. The problem is not with the funny money sitting out there on a project where the project is already started, and as far as the feds are concerned, the monies are obligated. That's wiped off the books. Okay. The problem with the funny money, Mr. Chairman, is when you have projects that have not been started in the year in which they were authorized, and they are going to have to lay claim to out year federal authorizations at the same time that you're preparing a new program of work for a current year. For instance, I can probably go back through here and find projects, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, that have not been started yet with federal authorization on them. And if I want to start that...
All right, let me stop you right there. I've got to apologize to my senators. You're both on finance committee, and they probably have heard this, but I haven't heard it. I want to kind of get the scoop straight on it. When you have a federal allocation of $136 million and you establish where you're going to spend that $136 million, don't you encumber it into a project?
No, you don't encumber it until the project is authorized and the feds sign off on it.
Well, what happens to it? Does the feds keep it?
Yeah. What happens?
They don't give it to you to put into short terms until...
No, sir. No, what happens is this. This means that we've got to draw on the federal treasury up to that amount of money.
Okay.
At the same time, in order to make that draw, you appropriate money to us, which is basically general fund. Now, if you gave us on a $100 million project, $100 million, of which $90 million is reimbursable from the feds, what you're telling me is, Commissioner, go out and spend, and then put your bill into the feds, and you'll take $100 million out of the general fund, out of the state general treasury, $100 million,
okay.
And when the project is complete, there'll be $90 million come back in from the feds, and the state government will only be out $10 million.
And then you roll that into your next project.
Well, no. Then what you're doing is See, you don't roll anything. You now used up that federal money that might have been appropriated in, say, 79, okay? You might use it up, say, in 1980 or 81. But as long as the project was approved and we got the federal authorization, that money is there.
It's drawable.
It's drawable, and it comes off the total that we had for that year.
Okay, I understand that. And if you don't draw it in that fiscal year, it stays in there for how long?
Well, if you don't draw, well, on the federal money itself, I think that's no year money unless they put a 3 or 5 year cap. Anybody answer that, Warren?
Yes, 3 years.
Allocation. Now, if you don't use it, if you don't use the money, let's say in this year, I have $135 million, and all I get is obligated is $130 million. The other $5 million goes up for grabs to the other states, and that's where we get a lot of...
In 5 years?
No, this year.
You have to, so you have to present federally approved, or not federally approved, but federally warranted type projects for that $135 million.
I got it. Put it this way. I've got to use my obligational authority in the year in which it was given to me, in terms of getting projects approved.
Yeah.
But then I have 3 or 5 years to complete the project.
Yeah. But you have to, this year, within your calendar year, you've got to submit projects that are qualified under the federal program.
That's correct.
For all categories up to the $135 million.
That's correct.
So that starts this funny money process.
That's correct.
And then you've got $100 million of state money to work with that. So if there's two projects that come forward right away and you award them, you use the $100 million in that and you're in a constant spend receipt basis. You don't get it right away. You've got to spend it before you can receive it.
Well, you are, but part of the problem, and I'll let Jim elaborate, part of the problem is that I suspect a lot of that went on and not applying the money to the projects. For instance, if we had a project, let's say Diamond Boulevard, it was a $100 million project. Well, then that $100 million ought to be set up in the Diamond account, period. And every expenditure you make, you say, I spent $30 million, I build the fence for 90% of that, and I set up a reimbursable account, and I'm constantly applying against Diamond. Now, if I had another $500 million project on another one, including federal and general funds, that money would be applied only to that project. And that's the way it's got to be with a limited number of pockets. Because the more pockets you establish out there, the more, you know, it's like a pool table with more pockets. You never know where the ball's going to go or where the money's going to come out of. So
I understand, and that's part of the CPC.
That's correct. Yes,
that was part of your whole dilemma, Jim, right?
Go ahead, Jim.
I wanted to define funny money. Funny money is really the Diamond Boulevard, $100 million, $10 million state, $90 million Fed. But the Feds, we spend the $100 million, but the Feds only give us $70 million, but we spent the other money. Remember, all bills are first paid out of the general fund. It just doesn't get reimbursed, so we made an unauthorized expenditure of general fund money. That's funny money, as Glenzer first used the term several years ago.
Yeah, well, I've been using it for 20 years as mayor of Nenana. When I was mayor of Nenana, we did a FAP project. We did on our first FAP project, they almost drove me crazy because what we had to do is we had to get our money, our paperwork in and through to the feds in order to meet our deadline for our contractors. And they always forgot to dot an I or cross a T or something, and the feds would bring it back. And you were all constantly right up against the peg on trying to get that money cash flow, and this is apparently the way you folks work too. Work on a reimbursable to your contractor. Is that correct, Jim?
Not to the contractor, to the general fund.
To the general fund. Well, you see, you've got enough money in there that you can do that.
So it goes well.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, what it boils down to, when you authorize us to spend $100 million, and if you put it in parentheses and said $90 million is the federal authorization and $10 million is the general fund non-reimbursable, what you're really saying is, I'm giving you guys the authority to spend $100 million on this line item. But you better have controls in there and show up with $90 million back in receivables. So what you're saying, it goes something like this. I go out and I spend, I got a $100 million budget. And I go out and spend $20 million, okay? The Fed is supposed to cough up 90% of that. So immediately, as soon as I do that, I set up a receivable on that account for that expenditure for $18 million, okay? Now, if the Feds come back in with $18 million on that, it balances out, and I got a zero balance. And the general fund has gotten $18 million of the $90 million back. Now, if I spent $20 million and the Fed said, hey, wait a minute, you guys really didn't dot the I, and I'm not participating up to the full 90%, and when I've set up a receivable for $18 million and they cough up only $15 million, I have overspent $3 million because they have chosen not to participate for whatever reason. And now I'm on my way to a little bit of deficit spending. And we have not been able to account for it in that respect. It hasn't been accountable. I think it's relatively easy to do, and that's what we should be doing.
And are you going, are we going back, are we going back year by year by year, going back into the annals? Is that what you've got Jim doing, working these out? I know last year you had a big catalog of projects that you were zeroing out. Mm-hmm. You were trying to get zeroed out, but are you finding some real discrepancies as far as paperwork is concerned back there? And is that where this $40 million that you're in the hole?
What we're showing is on projects completed, instead of having the reimbursable account zero out like it should, it shows about a $9 to $10 million negative balance. That's true, right, Jim? And then the other $29 to $30 million, Mr. Chairman, is related to a phase by phase analysis of projects, you know, that have not been completed, and it shows that even though they're not completed, like say in a utilities phase, for instance, or some phase of the project, we were budgeted to spend X, and we may have spent 1.25X, something like that. So while we're not in trouble yet because the project is not complete, if we don't take notice of this and do something about it now, ultimately we're going to have troubles.
Okay, then the $29 million you can do something about. But the $10 million that have completed projects, has our time run out to go back and get a dip at the Feds on it?
Well, you're not going to get it from the Feds. You can't get it from the Feds.
Why?
Because
then I'm missing something. Wasn't it their call saying that you were out of sync on that particular phase of the project and you didn't get the reimbursables back to the federal, to the general fund?
No. It goes like this.
Or is it stuff that was spent by the department that wasn't authorized by the Feds in the first place?
Well, either authorized, maybe authorized in the first place, or apparently, but not authorized. That's correct. So.
Just for your information, so your staff can come by and get the wording prioritized interest and scheduled projects. I've thrown in our favorite project that somehow inadvertently got left off with an authorization of $33 million for federal funds. The strong letter of intent saying that the department deviates from this prioritized order. Boniface is first, Highland is second, Yarn and Rabbit Tree is third, then the rest of them go in the order they were in the budget. You are to come to LBNA for permission.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think that's consistent with what I've been trying to say here. It's consistent. And the only question I have is that's still got to go through the full process, the full budgetary process of the full committee and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Subject to that, I don't have a problem with it.
There won't be any problem with the committee process.
Are you done, Tim?
Well, you might want to, we're working the wording up right now.
I'd like to do the same thing that I told the chairman. You know, this is when you folks change it on me, what do I do? I'd like to take a look at the full picture, and I'd like to see what that does to the full scope of work. If I've got reservations, I might want to come back and discuss it with you.
Okay, well, that's why I'm telling you. Because when you put all your little tip, your projects across the land, there are 14 things that that project has got more of those little X's in the box than any other project on your list. And you guys don't want to do it because you can't phase it. It's $33 million in a chunk, and so nobody wants to do it. And eventually, that project deserves to be done. And, you know what else I learned? When you guys worked up your technicals on the Highland project, you used 1984 numbers. When you worked up the technicals on the rest of the projects, including my favorite one, you used 1981 numbers.
So
that's not very fair, Commissioner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, every time I come here, I learn something. And I just learned something new again. And when I've got Riley looking at it, and we'll lay it up on the table.
Well, the problem that I have is that, Senator, you might just hang 1 minute. The reappropriation and the appropriation bill, the Senator has just asked us to make sure that we reviewed the governor's capital budget. In the governor's capital budget project for District 17, Representative Schultz and mine, part of the district, are several road projects. That's a part of the number that's going into the district. Are we saying now that those are in jeopardy because we're $40 million short and they may have to take a different priority with those that have been engineered that are ready to go to the street that we don't have this money to fund?
It all depends, Mr. Chairman, on which of two options we choose to follow on cleaning this thing up.
So whose options are those?
Well, there's one that we're fighting with. We're fighting these things in our own shop. We close the door and go out this thing. I got two schools of thought, okay? The one school of thought is to go through this thing real fast, find out how far in a hole we are, find out how much it's going to cost to complete all the projects that we got going right now, how much to complete, find out how much in a hole we really are going to be, okay? And what I sense would happen is we'll find some projects that it's going to cost more to complete than what was authorized. We'll find other projects, and maybe I'm an optimist, that say it's going to cost less, so there'll be some money there, okay? And then get this thing in and come up with one massive reappropriation bill. Projects that we may not want to do.
Reappropriation.
Big massive reappropriation bill that looks at this whole list of things. What do we want to throw out? How do we want to make up the difference? And so on and so forth. And let's restart on 1 July. The other option...
Is that in concert?
The other option, which I got to tell you, I can see some benefit to, is to proceed along the same lines and find out how much it's going to take to complete, and find out which projects are in trouble, and then by...
In trouble by what?
By either being over-expended already or in danger of being over-expended because of over-obligation on phases, over-expenditure on phases. Find out how much money we think it's going to take to solve that, okay? And then get that money either from savings on other projects that are going to take less than we think to complete.
So does that... Go ahead. I'll let you finish your thought.
Let us do that, and then let us take all these projects out and go through the process that I described to you earlier, where we send the projects out to the legislators, mm-hmm. and to the regions to find out where you want these projects haven't been started yet, Senator. This is what we'll be saying. And here's my 6-year program. Where do you think they ought to go in the 6-year program so I can recast it before next year? And then once I get that information from you, and this happens during the summer, I'm then in position to bring everything forward, wipe all the projects out that have not been started, and start with a new program of work in the next capital budget.
I feel an empty pit in my stomach when we do this, that there's going to be realignment of some of these programs, not on a orderly development of reconstruction of the Alaska Highway or the reconstruction of the Richardson Highway, and I'm going to see more emphasis going towards urban traffic and they haven't seen me scrap yet, but by God, they start getting into that and they'll see some scrapping.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
In my opinion, that is probably the biggest reason, not to do it in one fell swoop right here, right now.
That's right.
But rather to do it in an orderly fashion where all the chips are laid on the table and say, look, here is where we are. If you think you got a hole in the pit of your stomach, every time Merrill comes to see me, I want to close the door. But anyway, he's there. And anyway, it seems to me that if we lay everything on the table, say it the way it is, say what it's going to take, say what we want to do, and then approach it in an orderly manner, coordinating between the executive and the legislative branches, so that next year we come out with a program of work that is complementary to the whole transportation system. I think we're better off. I have a concern that if we jump into it too fast, and I don't know, like I said, we're still battling in my own shop over this. If we do it too rapidly, I'm concerned that we don't lose this whole capital budget for this year.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. Just
I guess the concern I have, Commissioner, is we keep using the term started. And I would hate to see some differentiation that says, well, if you already have a certain phase of the planning, that gets the high priority, because it's a political system. Sure. And there's some districts that have never gotten the started stage. And I don't want to see them penalized, because like AMATS is a good example. They've been organizing, my God, they're getting, you know, almost the moon, the stars, and everything else. And it's not fair.
Not
to the
according
rest of the state.
To some senators.
Well, but reality, no.
He's not here, so I can say that freely.
Let's talk about her now, she's gone. But that's my concern. You know, the districts that have never had a chance to get anything, or very little, have that chance yet, that they're not just thrown out because they haven't gone through the first phase.
Chairman,
yes.
I understand your concern, and that's why we'll go back to all the projects and see work that was done on them. But the fact that work was done doesn't necessarily mean that the priorities are still there for that to be done.
Right.
Just because you tossed, you know, X number of bucks doesn't mean that it's still a good project. And that's the danger with something lagging back there without reassessing your priorities every year. That's what we're trying to solve.
Yeah, okay. Well, just us kids. I'm concerned about, because every year in the past few years, why the legislature has looked forward in the budget process, and of course it's been a money management process since the oil money came in, that the biggest share of the legislative attention has been to where does the budget and all of this, and it's this reappropriation budget that's coming along, and that scares me. That if you're in this kind of soup, we better get the message out to the, and I imagine you've already done that, to the Finance Committee and to the legislatures, there is no reappropriation budget this year as far as highway projects are concerned.
I told Senator Fakes that early on.
Well, nobody's told us, and I think that it has to be told, and maybe if you would. If you could follow up and have Jim or your staff put together a letter or a paper on this meeting that I can circulate, that I could send out as a memo to the legislators, that's well worded so that you don't get 60 phone calls in the first hour that it's been out, that we should set the stage for it, because it looks to me like as if there's not going to be any reappropriation realignments for at least a year.
Well, you mean in terms of additional monies?
Additional monies or using old monies and saying, you know, it's just like, I know that we were kind of hoping that in our district, which is just a small item, that Fish Creek Bridge in the crossing over to Northway, people have been hollering and screaming, and they've got school buses and they've got everything going, and I think that you had that. I know Glenn had it on his list, and we were going to get that into the reappropriation. Now it looks like if that's going to be dead, well, we ought to put her on top of the table like you're doing and say, hey, there's no way that we can do it one more year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to do is get this whole process out on the table. And let's get the pros and cons of whatever program we're going to do. And if I might just make an observation, maybe you know, I talked to Senator Fakes, and she has only been, you know, more than fair to me up there. But it seems to me that maybe, some kind of, if it doesn't happen, and I don't know this, some kind of strong relationship between transportation, a function, and what that finance committee does right within the legislature, probably wouldn't be, you know, I don't know how much this is done, but.
Well, that's my approach. My approach is that I think that the chairman of each of the standing committees ought to be on the subcommittee of the finance committee that deals with that. And we've been tracking, and I've had my staff tracking everything that's been going on as far as DOT PF is concerned. And the thing is that I'm concerned about it because 90% of our policy is where do the bucks come from?
Right.
And you know, and I'm concerned, I guess I got to go back to the CPC, the Capital Project Cleanup Overview and Status that you come in last year, that you indicated a very strong position last year, that you had a system that was put together that could capture this, that could keep it from happening more. Now, the last year or the current fiscal year that we're in, is it in a different tracking system than the old stuff, or is it still in the MISH and the MASH?
Well, it's in the MISH and the MASH, Mr. Chairman.
So there is no new system yet?
Well, no. Go ahead, Jim. Answer. No, that's not all true.
Okay.
That's not all true. It's not as bad, it seems.
The old system, we have new Cascade County system. When it came online July 1, it also did not track this very problem of the mix, whether it's state money or federal. And it's still the same thing. What the commissioner's asked me to do is bring the system which runs parallel to that, identifies your project right there. By the way, you've got more money than anybody else.
Don't tell anybody that. But you ought to remember that my district's got 57% of the highway system in Alaska, too.
But we're bringing this back up to run this parallel. Out of this will be the way he manages it until the city county system comes up to where in fact is that can track it. So this system by the 15th of March will be running current. Today's expenditure showing today. Instead of just June 30th.
And separate.
And separate. And sorted by your district in the and daily.
Well, yeah. We've been working it, Senator. We bumped up into a few, you know, there's no excuses, a lot of explanation. And one is trying to meld into a new accounting system, keep our operation going at the same time.
Well,
it's kind of where we are.
You know, so what we're saying is that we've got some real hard stuff ahead of us, that the accounting system that we're in with now, with that big, massive electronic machine that we got that we call the computer, is really mashing numbers, but it's giving us MISH to reporting, and it is not, we're not getting it there, and it's not good enough to keep us out of trouble in the future.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I've had Dan working with my directors of design and construction. These guys are literally keeping matchbook cover systems. I mean, you know, that's a slang term. I said, Dan, we need a system within the system. I don't want to depend on this baby. And he's been working with DNC. Maybe you can explain a little bit to the center, Dan, on what you've done.
Well, first of all, there's two things about the accounting system. There's the system, and there's the way we use it. There's nothing in the hardware and software that the state has right now that couldn't serve our purposes if we, the people that use it, wanted to put into effect those kinds of controls.
Yeah.
Okay. When we came over, nobody knew that we wanted to control these sorts of things, or at least it wasn't policy, because we hadn't gotten a report yet. Now we see it, we look at what we've put into the system, how we've used the system, and no, the way we're using the system right now, cannot control these features, thus we're putting in a parallel system on the side.
You might describe what you work with the DNC with.
Right. Critical to how we do this. One, we've got to keep track of the different kinds of funds that we're using. We have to keep track of it on the budget side, so you know when you program federal dollars to a project, if it's a fed dollar, you just program. Likewise, the state. When you spend the money, you spend a state dollar versus a fed dollar. And you're constantly subtracting what you spent from your budget in order to be able to track on balances. In addition to that, you've got to be able to figure out what's it going to take me to get to the end of my project. Because our goal is to get the project built. So that means we've got a new number out here called the latest estimate to complete. We've met with our design and construction directors, and so we'll be tracking the budget that you gave us, amount of money that we spent. The latest estimate our engineers said that it's going to take to get to the end. When you got those three figures, and you got them in the same language that you can subtract an apple from an apple for an apple, we can tell you, one, that we spent the right kind of money, and two, do we have enough of the right kind of money to get to the end of the project? Right now, we do not have the ability to answer those two questions with our use of the current system.
But, Dan, with the system that you've got, the use factors are there. Like in my business at home, I hate the computer because I was trained in school hard card. So what I do is I've got a little book in my side pocket of my desk, and when they bring me my computer runs, I immediately open my little book, and it tells me what all of these figures say, and I sit down with a tablet and I put it all together, and then I get over on the calculator and I figure it out, and I can figure out my percentage on a calculator, and then I turn to the bottom page of the 29 page report and it says 17.5% margin, and I look at my calculator and it says 17.5. I know, because I've got a system. In other words, what I'm saying is that all of the system that you got in the machine, you still have to have a system up here as to how you're going to calculate each one and how you're going to track each project. And that's what I'm asking, is that are we going to keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper into the soup, or are we shortcutting the electronic system to do, in other words, so that we can come up and we can say the system's not satisfied yet, but we're doing it and we're tracking with the system, but we've got a handle on the system. We know where we're at.
Let me try to answer this more detail, because I'm the guy that makes the system. You know, we just got this speech an hour ago, that we did on the back of a match cover. The fact is, Mr. Chairman, that it was beyond my absolute belief that this kind of stuff didn't go on at a project management level, okay? And that we're keeping the records, and instead, depending on this, which got to be system, not necessarily this one, but the old accounting system for the sake of system, okay? Mm-hmm. And then taking whatever was there without regard to the records, which you just described, which should have been kept, and which through many years of lack of discipline, and once again, I'm the guy that's sitting here now, so it's my fault, okay? But the fact is, the lack of discipline in demanding that these guys do it, depending too much on this system, and we end up where we are right now. Mm-hmm. Well, now that I know it doesn't exist, I never believed in this world that people handling the amount of money that we deal with didn't at least keep those kinds of hard copy in the desk drawer. And so we can insist on that. Dan's been working with the design and construction fellows, and they've got their own internal systems, and I said I want one for the whole department. Get them together, assimilate them, they come up with one at least interim system for the whole department, so I know these guys are all tracking the same way. One little problem. If you remember at the beginning, I said I've got some homework to do with other departments, okay? And quite frankly, I've got to do some homework with the Department of Administration, because they run the accounting system. They're properly charged with that. And the way it's been in the past, for whatever reason, at least what I'm going to believe is, that I don't care what kind of records you got there, whatever's in this system is what counts. Now, I don't know this to be true, okay? And I'm not saying anything that it is true or isn't. But I sure am going to meet with these folks and see if it is. And if it is, why it is, and why there's not some kind of reconciliation besides a plug balance, okay?
Okay. So, yeah, and that's a good, and I'm glad that you're on track on it, because let me ask you the question. Is the airport fund in the same mess?
No, it's slightly better.
Slightly better?
Slightly better, Mr. Chairman, because they at least are forced to come up with operational data to support landings and leases and things of this type. But we're in the process of getting them a new system, because they've got to work through AXIS also.
Okay. We'll let the record show that Representative Schultz has joined, and Representative Schultz, welcome to the table, and you can ask a question.
Sure. I don't want to reinvent the wheel or anything here. You might just let me know if you've already addressed it. But, okay, in talking about this money, would the projects, we've been going over projects in our district looking for money to reappropriate, and we're looking for example, a bridge in Northway.
We talked about that.
Okay. Is that money specifically eligible that we've been looking at, line item wise, eligible for reappropriation?
Yes. Yeah, in answer to your question, you know, that you can always reappropriate something, but it's a zero-sum game. And if that, I'm not mistaken, if that bridge, was that appropriated some time ago?
It's been in the system two or three times, and what they did is that it got appropriated, Dick, and then they built the wrong bridge. Right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, and they took a perfectly good bridge about a mile away and rebuilt it and left the old bridge.
And we've been looking at some other monies in the district that have been appropriated in District 17 that are no longer, it's either been shelved or it's not, it didn't go out to a bid or whatever. And we're looking to reappropriate that money into Northway. That's a specific example.
Short answer to your question, I don't think there'll be any money for reappropriation the way there was last year. Because as I told the committee earlier, it looks to me like we are in the hole in terms of spending money.
But the problem with that, though, okay.
Go ahead.
The problem with that money was appropriated to be spent in the district on highway rehabilitation, bridge rehabilitation, replacement, et cetera. Okay. If that money was not used specific for that project, then that money is still not be there.
I agree. Jim's got a file. Tell us, talk about it. You were talking about the Fish Creek Bridge. That's right. Where is it?
You got to be careful because there's 287 fish creeks in Alaska.
Right.
I was looking at was the Northway Road Bridge construction project.
Right.
Which is June 30th. It's a all state funded and had an unexpended balance of $287,000 of state money at June 30th.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe that's the one.
That's the one.
And it's appropriated in Chapter 101, 82, page 75, line 7.
All right, so the money is there for that?
Money's there, and we're trying to get that bridge done.
Well, where is it? Where is it by status? What happened? Is it?
It's sitting in the active. It's sitting in the active status right now. I don't know.
It's bid ready. It's ready to go. It's been designed. I mean,
The bridge is only the...
Okay, Warren just was running. The design is done.
Right.
Warren, why don't you come? You
have tell us what the scoop is, Warren.
On that bridge.
The project initiated by the Northern Region, the bridge design is basically complete. I think they've estimated it will only take them a couple of weeks to get a set of plans out on the street.
Yeah.
Right. The project was in the department's budget, I believe, in 84.
Yeah.
And it did not make the general fund cut. Okay. So the small amount of money that was originally available for it just completed the engineering and the small amount of money. The project has been considered as an alternate for the federal funding, but the entire roadway would have to be realigned and reconstructed along with the bridges in order to get it. Feds were running to build this bridge without bringing the whole system up to standards. So there's a deficit now. I believe the figure's around $850,000 to build the bridges with state money.
There's a deficit?
I mean, additional funding required.
To build that bridge?
There's approximately $250,000, I think, Tim said, left on the books. Including the cost about $1.1 million in construction and engineering to build the actually physically build the bridge.
But we were told $475,000 last year.
But if you got, but if you qualify for federal monies on this thing,
no, you don't.
Huh?
You don't because the project that would have they'd have to rebuild the whole bloody road.
Yeah, it would increase
all the way from the highway to Northway, because it's not a federal system road, Dick.
I'm with you on that one.
Okay.
Because there was money appropriated to go in and redo that road.
But not federal money.
No, federal money. It was state money. Mm-hmm. But it was supposed to be, the intent of that whole thing was to bring it up to some kind of standard, et cetera, and try to get it, make it eligible for federal funding, et cetera. What happened with the money is they went in and used the same road base, the same curves that were there in 19-whatever the road was put in, 51, are the same. Nothing was done. All they did is haul some rock in to some low areas, et cetera. I don't want to take the committee's time away from that particular one.
Well, we'll get into the specifics on that. My problem is, it looks to me like as if we, is that you're progressing on it. If Dan will kind of take a hint from an old war horse that you, in order to make a system work, you maybe have to do some pins and tacks and cut and paste type thing in order to make the thing work until the system is up. But see, this brings me to my next problem, and that is that there are some people that want to do away with your equipment capital revolving fund, and they're never going to get away with it, doing away with it, as long as I'm sitting as chairman of the transportation committee. You might want to trim it, but you can't get rid of the bloody thing, because if you do, you don't. And I was the one that set that up back in 61. And the thing is that has always served our whole program well, because you're putting 90% money in there, lots of times.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that I've already been on record as saying that I would oppose that. And I agree with you that maybe we're carrying too big a cash balance in there, and maybe we can trim it back. But to take that and put it back into each department's appropriation on their capital side, the way I see the capital budget going in the future years, it may very well be that you'll end up without the equipment you need when you need it to do the job. And you know, we're not lower 48. We're kind of spread out. If that happens, I think we're doing a disservice to the state.
Yeah.
I'm on record as saying that.
Well, and I think that, you know, if we need to trim some of it out of there, if they, what has it got, 47 million?
I think right now there's 47 total of 37 cash.
Right. Right now, about the $40 million number, once we look at what our replacement program is on.
About $40 million. So if we're looking at maybe having to pick up some of that federal 29,
we can.
That maybe we ought to take a look at maybe that being a possible.
Look.
But if we, I think that we really need to get a memo out on this, Commissioner, so that everybody's facing up on the same music, because it's going to affect every district, and I just don't want the people from the upper heights of Anchorage or the lower slough in our district to think that they've been had an end run put around them because of their project, knowing that it was on the 6-year list 3 years ago and was funded, and Dick has got on limb, I've gone out on limb, you've gone out on a limb telling the constituency out there this project is on our list and here's where it is and this is what the process is, and now comes the dawn and we find ourselves in a position where we're going back and saying to people in Fairbanks, no, we cannot do the Geist Road extension because we are out of funds and we have to make a priority. Is it going to be that, or is it going to be the reconstruction of the Alaska Highway on from mile 65 north? Well, you know that I don't have the horsepower in the legislature to be able to say that it's going to be the all systems roads.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't been in this job too long, but based on what I've seen here, and based on the commentary I've heard on the 6-year program, that's probably the biggest fault with the 6-year program is you put it in, get it authorized, and it falls back there, and you start a new one the next year, and there's never been any continuity or accountability for not doing it in a given year, and I think we can solve that.
And
it's going to be painful.
And that's my problem with this year. Jim just said, you know, Senator, your district's got the biggest chunk of the federal money. Well, we got the biggest chunk of the federal system too. But the thing is that we're going to go back and say, well, we've got this project, this project, this project, and it ain't so. It ain't so. It's phantom. There's no money out there to allocate in this capital budget yet. That's only to satisfy this $136 million.
What you got?
Is it then? My guess, and it's 5 o'clock, and I want to let you go. I could keep you here for an hour, because I think that maybe what we need is that we need to maybe take a look at establishing some kind of a systems position as far as statutes are concerned. Requiring you to have certain standards or is it, you know, if I had known this last year, we'd have had a required standard by now.
Well, Mr. Chairman, last year when we spoke to you, I didn't.
You were green like I was.
Well, not only that, but I didn't, and I knew we had problems, but I didn't know how big or how small they were.
It wasn't
until December that we got all this. Because we couldn't crack the program to find out where we stood with regard to the federal authorizations, and, you know, and the general fund expenditures.
Okay.
One point, Senator, the department to get this far cost us $1.5 million.
You're almost as bad as APA.
To get that far, that's how what we had to do. To get to where we want to now is basically just updating the budget size. So we're that close. I'm telling you, in 21 days, I tell him he's going to be there where he can make decisions on this kind of thing.
Well, why don't we take another? Go ahead, Senator.
Just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. Thanks. Let's make an assumption that the governor's capital budget passes both houses. It's not held up now. It's passed. It's now law. What I hear is that may not end up being funded anyhow. In other words, are all those projects that go if we pass the law right now?
Well, not all, because you have some over-programming in there.
Yeah, that's my concern. Who determines where it's over-programmed and which gets cut?
But you see, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to set it up initially and say, okay, there's a funding level down, this line gets funded. Below the line, you either got to wait for additional obligation or authority, or one of these guys is going to have to fail.
And you're projecting that we do that for this budget?
I'm projecting we do that every year from now on.
Yeah.
So okay. because you see,
I can see,
Senator, the fairest way would be to appropriate the match for the $136 million and say that it's for the six-year program and have your priorities done by the six-year program, not by the appropriating bill. And maybe that's what we have to do. Maybe we have to establish some of this in hard core law so that it sets some criteria for you. And I'm not trying to strap you. I'm thinking down the line, just like on the equipment revolving fund.
You see, what I'm describing to you will be done just that very way. Because what you're doing is you're taking your program and translating your program into the financial requirements through the budget. But there's never been a correlation that I've seen between the six-year program and the budget. And in order for it to be effective, it's got to do that. But you also got to recognize on the downside that you may have the six-year program laid out beautifully. As long as you've got over-programming in your budget, which is the current year of the six-year program, the possibility exists that you're going to have to revise your program the next year for the projects that did not get funded in the current budget year.
Yeah, and I think that maybe you're right. And I think that what we need to do is to really take a look at dealing with CIPs on the highway programs and on the airport programs as a concurrent or a joint resolution of the legislature rather than in the appropriating structure. Because then you would have a better shot at it to be able to have a systems position in it rather than it being all done up on the fifth floor.
We need a systems position, Senator.
That's right.
And that's probably an internal working of the legislature, but we need a systems approach to this.
That's, right.
That's what I'm trying to establish in my shop.
Yeah.
And if that could be followed through the rest of the budgetary process, I think it would be a good thing.
Okay. Is there any other questions, Senator?
No.
Anything else you want to say right now? Why don't we leave it at this? We're going to look at that systems thing. We'll come back to you, and maybe, Jim, what are you saying? In 30 days, you will have this thing? So about the end of March, let's have another session.
That's good.
Mr. Chairman, when will you have the list of where the $40 million is? You say 30 days?
We can get that to you now.
I don't have it with me, but it's sitting on my desk.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but you're going to give me a, a memo too, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that we can circulate.
Senator, my biggest problem with the memo right now is getting the other people on board. I got to talk to the other departments, OMB. I'm figuring that within, by the end of next week, I could probably have a memo out.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. No other further business?